Franchise Pictures. Warsaw, Poland. TriStar Pictures and Franchise Pictures present.
Na ramię, broń!
Steven Seagal, The Foreigner.
Naprzód marsz!
Soldiers march on parade. Harry Van Gorkum, Jeffrey Pierce, Anna Louise Plowman, Max Ryan, and Sherman Augustus. A man in a fur hat smokes a cigarette outside an impressive guarded building.
Meet me at the Sigmund Pillar.
The man sucks hard on his cigarette. Now another man is pacing nervously, almost camouflaged by the leafless shrubbery. He gently bangs his fists together, then searches the parkland around him. A car pulls up, and the driver gets out to open the back door for the fur-hatted man.
It'd be worth it. Too cold for false alarms.
It's too cold for ice cubes. Apparently, we've intercepted a conduit. Well, there's only one way to find out.
The two men get into the back of the car.
To tell me who to.
Yet!
Ten.
Please, no!
Nine.
You are!
Eight.
Too
seven.
Late.
Six. Five. Four. Three.
It's
two.
Dangerous!
What?
The truth!
A bullet is fired into the tortured man's chest. Outside,
he knew you, Jared. I thought you were anonymous.
I am now.
The rules are changing. Our client has an aversion to rising death tolls. His reputation's already called into question, which means close associates could be next.
The only aversion our client has is to failure. As far as reputations are concerned, you two were hired to intercept that package, not some monkey with a death wish.
My assignment is to eliminate any source of knowledge.
I guess I just did your job for you.
Really?
We'll get the package.
I hope so. I'm beginning to think you're getting out of your depth here. I want the package delivered by Friday. I suggest you hire a professional.
Jared gets into his car, leaving Marquet, the nervous man, looking a little shaken. Now a woman's pulling on her stockings.
Jonathan, are you okay?
Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll be fine.
The woman to Jonathan Cold.
Who was it?
Warsaw.
Do I know her?
Listen, if I'm not jealous, you don't need to be jealous.
If you really love me, you be jealous.
She gets her bag.
It was a nice try, anyway.
Nice try.
As she leaves, Jonathan's phone rings again.
Yeah.
Hey, John. You come for the service?
Hey, Sean. Yeah, as soon as I can get a flight.
What time do you think you'll be here?
Well, what time's the memorial?
3 p.m. Dad would have wanted you to come.
I'll be there, Sean. I said I'd be there.
Fine.
Now, a grand white house. Inside, Jonathan enters a lavish dining room where Marquet is seated at a large table.
Hello. Please, take a seat.
Jonathan takes a seat at the opposite end.
You sure you won't eat?
No, I'm in a hurry. Gotta go.
I've often wondered over the last 6 months if you've enjoyed Paris at all. What shall I do without you?
I think you'll probably manage just fine.
Manage? To find another friend. And one who comes through each time. They don't fall from the sky.
Well, you have Dunois.
Oh, yes, Dunois. Quite useful when the most resolute measures are required.
A waiter brings a tray to Jonathan.
What is this?
Persuasion.
For what?
One final favor.
I told you I gotta go.
It's a small favor. I want you to pick up a package and deliver it to Germany. Following your personal affairs, of course. The patron's address is on the back.
Jonathan turns the envelope over.
Convenient for you?
I really don't want to get involved.
The package is at Versailles. Dunois will accompany you. Two Russians have brought it in from Athens. Neither speak French. They're holding it at a farm. You need only collect it from them. Simple.
Well, if it's so simple, why don't we all just meet in Paris?
Apparently, they're afraid to.
Dunois, a young, grey-haired man with a cigarette constantly balanced between his lips, waits impatiently outside the house for Jonathan. When he emerges, he joins Dunois at the back of a large, expensive white car, driven by a chauffeur.
How long to Versailles?
Some time. We'll be in Versailles when the car stops.
Ah, well, I wasn't asking you.
An hour, maybe less.
Marquet tells me you're leaving. I'm sorry to hear that. What you two had in common remains a mystery.
I'd say we had ethics in common.
The car travels steadily on in the fading light, slowing down when it reaches a lonely farmhouse in a field.
One of Marquet's safe houses. His aunt's for. You can always wait here.
When we're inside, move the car up to the house.
Okay.
The chauffeur watches as Dunois and Jonathan get out of the car and head over to the small cottage. Jonathan pulls out a gun.
Hey, listen to me. I know Alex sent you. We're gonna do this my way. Get your gun out and hide it. Take the left side. Don't say a word.
Okay.
They stand either side of the front door. Jonathan knocks. A scared-looking elderly woman opens the door.
Oui?
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Alex and me?
Bonjour.
She welcomes them in. Inside, two men are sitting at a table.
Gentlemen, you know why I'm here? I understand you have something for me.
What is it?
Their tongues are cut out. Is that the package?
One hands him a parcel.
I think this may be it, Dunois.
An armed man bursts in, hitting one of the mute men in the chest. As Jonathan's bullet finds the gunman, a bottle of liquor smashes in the hearth, and the liquid ignites. More gunmen jump in through the window, firing at Dunois and Jonathan. Jonathan shoots one of the men, while Dunois emerges from his hiding place with a pistol in each hand. As the flames lick around the room, another gunman reaches in through the window to fire at them. The elderly woman is cowering in the corner as a man with a scar across his face opens fire at them. Dunois and Jonathan, who shoots one more gunman as they go, help the old woman out of the building towards the car. The chauffeur's been shot. Dunois grabs the dead man from the driving seat and lays him on the ground.
Is that for me? Okay. Go over to this farmhouse with the lights right here.
Jonathan climbs behind the wheel, and Dunois races round to jump in next to him. The old woman is left standing in front of the blazing cottage as they drive off.
Who were they?
I don't know, but they were speaking Danish.
Sons of bitches. Well, let's see what they were willing to die over.
You don't want to do that. I said you don't want to do that. If you touch it again, I will blow your 2-inch dick off. You want to open the package? You'll do it with Marquis's permission after we go back.
We're going to go back to Marquis?
Yeah.
What if he's involved?
If you're involved.
Suddenly, Jonathan has a flashback to a fashion show. The packed room is dark, and bright flashing lights illuminate the models on the catwalk. He notices a man with a scarred cheek standing next to a grinning Dunois. The image is intermingled with the gunman from the cottage. Back at Marquet's mansion, security try to stop Jonathan and Dunois from entering.
What's all this?
A silly precaution, I assure you. Perhaps you could wait?
No, I've got to catch a plane.
Then I think you forgot something?
You're not thinking of trying to stop me, are you?
Be reasonable, Jonathan. We had an arrangement.
Hell, you know I don't risk my life for deliveries, particularly when those that I'm delivering to don't share the risk.
The job isn't finished.
Find yourself a new delivery boy.
Think about it for a moment. Nobody wants you to miss your flight.
Are you threatening me?
No, of course not. I just want a conversation. Little drink. Talk through what transpired.
Please.
Conversation. Remember? That's what we pay you for. To talk to people.
Do me a favor. Talk to my friend.
3-4 of them. Came in like the mist. I never heard them.
Who were they?
Danish.
Yeah, they were Danes.
Identification?
I didn't stick around to check.
Suddenly, the whole place is on fire.
There was a fire?
Yeah. You're unsafe. I sorted out myself.
Did you open the package?
No.
Then I think we're all agreed that this was unexpected.
I think the only thing that's unexpected is that I'm still alive.
You were hired to deliver the package.
Which was already there, by the way.
You're suggesting that someone's working the periphery. Are you implying it's me?
No, not really. I just think that maybe you're being played as a scapegoat, you know?
Suggestions?
I wouldn't trust anything but the zeros on the bills.
Let me take care of this, Alex. I'll deal with them personally.
Give me a moment, please.
To Jonathan.
Please, sit. I need a favor from someone I trust. Will you deliver the package to the agreed address? The patron's waiting.
Okay.
An envelope.
Thank you.
When you arrive in Warsaw, take my condolences to you and your family.
Jonathan has left behind a message which reads, Dunois knows the assailant. Warsaw, Poland. Jonathan's travelling down an escalator in a busy airport.
Surprised you're here. Thought you'd at least be incognito.
Run on the high. Here to take me to the services with your escort?
Just want to talk, that's all. Took some time finding you. Thought you were still in South America. I wouldn't think Paris suits you. City that defined decadence. And maybe that's the point. The last place on Earth you'd find Jonathan Cole.
Congratulations.
Your father died of natural causes, in case you wondered. Taking this ambassadorship was not easy for him, but he's always admired the Polish people. I know he wanted you on the team.
Let me ask you something. Do you think training terrorists in Pakistan was a team effort?
I suppose you think there's more honor in hiring out what we trained you to do to some foreign operative with a checkbook.
Somehow I fail to see the difference.
In most countries, you'd be killed for it.
You're an asshole.
Watch your mouth.
I know you're good at what you do. Your father made the mold. A lot's changed out there. You've seen it firsthand. Help tip the balance. Keep us informed.
Oh, ally and adversary.
Call it what you will.
You are an asshole.
I beg your pardon.
Jonathan throws Jared's henchman over the moving railing onto the adjoining up escalator.
Let him go.
A cemetery on a damp grey day. Soldiers march in front of a hearse. Now they're carrying a coffin draped in the American flag. Jared.
Jackson Cold will have a monument on the lawns of Arlington Cemetery. We're giving him a memorial here in Poland, on the soil of the country he defended so resolutely during his lifetime, before we return him to his native soil, to the country he loved so dearly. Jackson was a citizen, a colleague, father, friend, but only wanted to be remembered for what he considered his life's achievement, his family, his devoted sons, Jonathan and Sean. And so, as we prepare to send him home, let us pause to honor the legacy of a soldier who will never be forgotten.
Jonathan watches a short distance away as the mourners lower their heads. The sun sets over a busy freeway. Jonathan's looking through a scrapbook.
Hey.
Hey. Beautiful place, man. Love this.
Thanks.
You all right?
Yeah.
Drink?
Yes, sir. Love one.
Missed your flight?
You know, stand by. You're at everybody's mercy. How long you been in Poland for?
6 months.
Yeah?
Dad asked me to come work for him.
Uh-huh. So, I'm hoping you'll get a little bit better theater than Warsaw, because you know me, man. I've been there.
I have to ready Dad's office for transition. Dad had a lot of friends here, people that he,
made promises to that you gotta keep.
Not everything's a conspiracy, John. I mean, There are people in the world who actually do things for the right reasons.
Well, that's true, just not very often in our business.
It's funny how we all ended up in Europe. This funeral is as close as we're ever going to come to a family reunion.
Yeah.
You staying?
Now I gotta go to Germany.
Then what?
Back to France, I guess.
Do you have a cell phone number? Tracking you to Paris became a matter of national security.
I'll tell you what. I'll shoot your number immediately as soon as I touch ground. Great to see you, little brother.
It's good to see you, too.
Nastrovia.
Nastrovia.
Outside the Hotel Polski is a black van containing some men who are listening in as Jonathan makes a call from his room.
Hello, you've reached the Van Aken's residence. Sorry we're not able to take your call, but if you leave your name and number, we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you, and have a good day.
As one of the men puts a new reel-to-reel tape onto his machine, Jonathan walks over to the window and gazes down at the black van.
Schoolgirls.
Next morning, a boat makes its way slowly down a wide city river. Two men find Dunois in a cafe.
Marquet veut te voir tout de suite.
Bonjour, mes amis, Francis.
Marquet wants to see you right now.
Can't you see? I'm having an espresso. You're welcome to join me if you like.
The man said, now.
Nice toys.
They're armed.
You held us.
All right. If you insist, can I just pay my bill? Merci.
He reaches down as if for his wallet, but instead pulls out his gun and shoots both of the men dead. At Marquet's mansion, Dunois jumps up onto the high brick wall surrounding the property and drops effortlessly down on the other side. Inside, a maid is walking through one of the rooms. Dunois appears from a doorway, his gun raised. Holding a cigarette in his other hand, he creeps up behind her as she picks up a tray of food and checks it before starting off down the hall. He grabs her and presses the gun into her back before firing two bullets into her. She slumps onto the floor.
Bon appétit, mademoiselle.
He walks off, holding the tray high in front of him, then heads confidently towards Marquet's guards.
Hold it.
One guard takes the silver tray from Dunois, who in turn relinquishes a number of guns to the other. Next, Dunois is given back the tray, and he heads through the room towards Marquet. The guards follow closely.
Ah, I'm glad you came. You can leave us.
We'll be right outside.
Ever since our incident, I've insisted on expanded security.
You can never be too careful.
Wine.
Love some mercy.
I've been meaning to talk with you.
Is that so?
My manners, please. Sit.
Dunois takes a seat.
Concerns your interlude with Mr. Cold. Were you aware he recognized the assailant?
I wasn't.
Coincidence or something else?
Neither in my view.
Do you recall his assessment before leaving here? Inciting conspiracy. It's a very dangerous business.
Mr. Cold has a thing for conspiracies, but I doubt he'd set us up. It's not his style.
No. Of course you're right.
I'm always right. Is this why you called to see me?
It's a troubling thought, don't you agree? Someone so close, taking advantage, exposing you to a point of weakness. Check with me tomorrow. I have an errand in Mallorca and need someone I can trust. Shall I send you?
Dunois pulls a gun from his boot.
Yeah.
Dunois, one more thing. How did you know I wanted to see you?
Dunois shoots Marquet, sending his chair tumbling back.
Hello?
Yes, your daddy in.
Hello, can I help you?
Yes, Mr. Van Aken in.
No, I'm sorry, he's not. Can I take a message?
Do you know when you might expect him?
I'm not sure. May I ask his calling?
No, thanks. I'll call back later.
Jonathan picks up a newspaper.
May I help you?
Yeah, can I get a room here?
Sure. 40 euros, please.
You heard of a local called Joan Van Aken?
Of course, who hasn't?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just not from around here.
You don't have to be.
A picture of Jerome Van Aken decorates the front page of the newspaper.
Hello?
Yeah, listen, I need to ask you a question.
Sure, what is it?
You ever heard of a guy named Jerome Van Aken?
Yeah. Wealthy Euro-industrialist, old money rich.
What else?
Jerome Van Aken. Well, he's about as high profile as they come.
Yeah, he buys little contracts, builds them up,
and then sells them for the kind of money that you read about to avoid the headaches of running them.
They call him the Viking with the Midas touch.
He says he's married 9 years to a Meredith Casey.
I have no idea.
All right, thanks.
Berlin Airport. Dunois makes a phone call.
Hello, you've reached the Van Aken's residence. Sorry we're not in to take your call, but...
Dunois slams down the handset. Next, in the bowels of a brightly lit multi-story car park, a man walks away from his sleek black sports car. Dunois appears, and removing a tool from his jacket, breaks into the car. Once inside, the owner rushes back towards him.
Hey, what do you think you're doing? That's my car! Hey! Hey!
Dunois pulls out his gun. As the man falls to the floor, Dunois grimaces menacingly.
Bon voyage, mate.
U.S. Embassy, Warsaw.
You ever heard of a guy named Jerome Van Aken?
Yeah, wealthy Euro-industrialist. Old money rich.
He says he's married 9 years to a Meredith Casey.
I have no idea.
All right, thanks.
Jared's listening to a tape.
Why the hell is he asking about Meredith?
Guy does his research. Doesn't like surprises. A stickler for detail. At least that's what I get from his profile. Then again, maybe he finds her attractive.
And he knows?
Well, he's in Germany.
I let that little prick have a chance, and I let him walk away.
So what's the protocol here, Mr. Oliphant? Contact Van Aken?
Absolutely not. I want you to eliminate Mr. Cold. Not to get anywhere near Van Aken or his family. You understand me, Mr. Mims? I want Jonathan Cole an empty folder in Langley by noon tomorrow.
Mr. Mims puts on his sunglasses and leaves the room without a word. At the Van Aken estate, Germany.
Yes? Yeah, I'm here to see Mr. Van Aken. I'll send someone down.
May I help you?
Yeah, I have a message for Mr. Van Aken.
And who are you?
Well, I'm an old friend.
The guard stares at Jonathan as he walks away. Now Jonathan sitting in his car, a short distance from the gates. As the gates open for a large white luxury car, he takes a number of photographs with a small camera. A little girl sitting in the back seat gazes out happily. In a room at a large, eerie-looking hotel, Jonathan is studying the pictures he took of Aiken's car. He looks at the newspaper, which shows a picture of Jerome and Meredith on their wedding day. He's about to open the package rescued from the cottage when the phone rings.
Yeah?
Hello, this is Meredith Von Aken. Do you know who I am?
Yes, I do.
I'm calling on my husband's behalf. He's in London for the weekend. Mr...
Weber.
Mr. Weber, he was wondering if there's any way that we could send someone for the delivery.
Well, I was asked to deliver to your husband personally.
What if I were to come for it? Could you meet me? Well, today, if it's convenient.
Where?
There's a train station on Freudstrasse, a few kilometers outside Terminus. Do you know where it is?
No, but I can find it.
Shall we say in an hour, then?
Let's say in an hour.
I'll be in a white Rolls parked at the south side of the station. I'll see you then. Thank you very much, Mr. Webber.
The large white car pulls up outside the station, and a young man walks up to it.
Thank you again for meeting me, Mr. Webber. I hope it wasn't inconvenient. Is that it?
He hands her the parcel.
Thank you, Mr. Webber.
As the car pulls away, the young man heads into the station, holding the envelope Meredith has given him. He walks along the edge of the platforms towards Jonathan, who opens the envelope to find it filled with money. He gives the envelope back to the young man.
This is for your trouble.
When Jonathan arrives back at his hotel room, he finds it's been ransacked.
What the hell happened here?
As he steps gingerly into the room, a figure appears behind him and hits him over the back of the head.
Take deep breaths. Try and hold one in. Let it out. Slowly. Feel that sharp pain in the back of your neck. That centralized swelling. Blood's unable to circulate properly to your brain because of the clog. You'll have a terrible headache for the next few minutes. Now, within those few minutes, you are to tell me where the real package is. Oh, I assure you, that headache will be the least of your pains, Mr. Webber.
Miss Van Aken, do you work for Meredith or Jerome?
Mr. Webber, you're a funny man. More than just a simple errand boy. You seem to have taken an active interest in my employer. Now, I wonder why that is.
Are you the boyfriend?
What I am or am not is inconsequential to this moment. Right now, all that is important is for you to tell me where the real package is. In the next 4.5 minutes.
Couldn't you find it yourself?
Oh, perhaps I'm being vague. So let me clarify. Asphyxiation is the process by which air is shut off to the lungs, thereby cutting off oxygen to the brain. And when the brain dies, Mr. Webber, well, then, what's the point? Now, before you let that happen, why not use what little brain matter you've apparently been given to make an informed decision?
Listen, we can put it together. We're not the only ones who want this.
Unless you grew tits and look like Venus the fucking Milo, why in bloody hell would I do something like that? Deception begets deception begets deception, Mr. Webber. Without end. Plainly, it's bad business.
I know a lot of people.
You tell me where it is, or I put the first of 3 successive bullet holes in your face.
Okay. I have it in a locker in an overnight train station. I'll take you there.
Lovely. Where's the key?
In my right front pocket here.
The man reaches into Jonathan's pocket.
Smart move, Mr. Webber. You better hope that package is there.
At the station, the man marches Jonathan at gunpoint to the lockers.
Moment of truth, Mr. Webber. 2 sets of closure wait. So open it. Slowly. No puckering around, or I'll blow your bleeding spine in two.
Just like you say, nice and easy.
Jonathan slowly pushes a small key into the locker and opens the door to reveal a brown paper package. His assailant carefully removes it, then they both head into a heavily graffitied bathroom. Jonathan walks to the urinals.
Oi, where are you going?
What do you think I'm doing?
Easy. Easy.
As the man pulls out a knife and cuts through the brown paper, Jonathan leaps through a nearby window. The parcel explodes and the entire station erupts in a ball of flame. Timber, window frames and shattered glass fly out in all directions until the building is slowly engulfed in darkness, illuminated only by deep orange embers. Jonathan makes a call.
Richard?
Guess again. You want some advice, Mrs. Van Aken? Send them in pairs. If you want to leave an impression or body, two are better than one.
Especially when you have no idea who you're dealing with.
Mr. Weber, whatever your estimation of me, I assure you the least I am is naive. Do you honestly believe I'd send...
Naivete is not what I'd accuse you of, Mrs. Van Aken. Arrogance comes to mind, and I can only wonder what your husband thinks sending your lover
to collect what he's expecting.
Lover? Mr. Weber, you truly are misinformed. Richard works.
Worked?
For my husband, and was sent at his request when I told him about your magical package trick.
You know what I'm beginning to think? That your husband really does know anything about this. So, Mrs. Van Aken, I've called you to inform you that sending someone to kill me was your first and last mistake.
Mr. Weber?
Now it's morning, and reporters are outside the station.
A small explosion has erupted from a faulty gas line. Come on, look, look, what's going on? Hurry, come on!
A car pulls up outside. It's Mims.
It's bullshit. Must have lit a pipe on that kind of trajectory. How the fuck would he want to go and do that? Stress the local climate. Not unless he had to. Well, all right. We're gonna have some fun.
He screeches away, then walks into Jonathan's hotel.
Yeah. Oh, sehr gut. Genau. Oh, yeah. Amazing. Good morning. Welcome to the Hotel Terminus.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd like a room for the night.
And would you prefer two single beds or one double, Mr. Colt?
One double should be plenty, dear.
Certainly.
Jonathan's sitting in his car outside the Van Aken estate, watching as a white van is allowed in. A security guard watches the van on a CCTV screen. After the gates have closed, Jonathan leaps over a wrought iron fence onto the bank of a lake in the Van Aken grounds. Once on the path, he pulls out a gun. Two security guards are patrolling nearby. Jonathan watches them from behind a tree. He fires a bullet into each of them, and they drop to the ground. Another guard charges towards Jonathan, whose next two bullets find the man's shoulder. Jonathan holds his gun out ahead of him as he steps carefully towards a sentry post. He shoots the man on guard in the head, shattering the glass of the small shelter. A security guard inside the house watches some decorators on the CCTV, while Jonathan works away at a downstairs window with a glass cutter. A guard disturbs him, only to be knocked over a wall into icy waters below. Jonathan removes a perfect circle of glass from the window, then reaches in and opens it. At the hotel, Dunois to the receptionist.
Hi. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And you, sir?
Well, I'd be much better if I could find my friend. He forgot to leave me his room number.
And what's the gentleman's name?
Cold. Jonathan Cold. If I don't find him soon, we'll be missing a very important conference.
Mr. Cold... I checked Mr. Cold in this morning.
Wonderful. What is his room number?
I'm sorry, sir. I cannot tell you. Hotel policy.
No. Of course not. Perhaps you could call.
No problem.
The receptionist makes a call. In his room, Mims comes out of the bathroom dripping wet, with a towel wrapped around his waist. He walks through the suite to the phone.
I'm sorry, there's really nothing else I can do but take a message.
Mims picks up.
Hello?
you all the same.
You're welcome.
He's about to walk away when he pulls out his gun and shoots her twice in the chest. Upstairs, with a cigarette balanced between his lips, Dunois steps tentatively through Mims's suite with a pistol in each hand. He heads towards the bathroom, where the water is running in the shower. Standing outside the cubicle door, he fires a number of shots into the shower. Shards of glass hit the floor, but the cubicle is empty. Dunois turns back into the room, only to be met by Mims, fully clothed, holding a pump-action shotgun.
Feeling lucky?
The force of the blast sends Dunois flying backwards through the window. Dunois's body lays awkwardly on a blanket of broken glass. Jonathan walks slowly into a dimly lit corridor inside the Van Aken house. He hesitates, hearing some voices in the distance, then heads off again. Meredith Van Aken is lounging dozily in a bath. It's in the middle of a large, ornate bathroom, and the door is open. She doesn't notice when Jonathan's shadow looms over her.
Do you know who I am? I didn't think so.
Mr. Weber? What exactly are you doing here?
Trying to show you anyone can be reached.
What do you want?
I want to talk to your husband.
I know that Jerome will want to talk to you. Perhaps, though, we can come to some other kind of arrangement.
I doubt it.
Come, Mr. Weber, are you telling me you're a man of principle? In the light of these last few hours, I find that somewhat contradictory.
Why don't you call him for me?
Mr. Weber, please try and be reasonable.
Or you'll call the police and tell him about your boyfriend that's at the bus station in 1,000 pieces after you send him to kill me?
I told you he's not my boyfriend.
I don't really care. Call your husband or I will.
Hand me the phone, please.
Jonathan does as she asks, and she reluctantly taps in a number.
Julian, it's Meredith. Is Jerome there? How long will he be? Can you have him call me as soon as he's out? Thank you. Could you pass me my robe?
She glares at him. Later.
I don't understand. If you're planning to hand it over, why switch packages in the first place?
Regardless of what you think of my methodology, I'm a consummate professional.
So you believe I'm conspiring against my husband?
I didn't say that. But I was hired to deliver the package to your husband, not you. So that's the way it's going to have to be.
Then you are a man of principle.
Listen, everybody's got their choice as to how they stay alive. Some of us just don't know it.
Hello.
Mr. Mims.
Yeah, well, checking in under his name proved to be risky. Mr. Code. Pardon me, Mr. Weber, it turns out, is a very unpopular man these days.
What about the rental car?
Driving a 4-door silver Mercedes, along with a few other people in town.
Jesus Christ. Now you listen to me very carefully, Mr. Mims. I want this situation resolved immediately.
How shall I proceed?
If I have to answer that question, I assume you are not up to the assignment.
Mims terminates the call.
Okay, silver Mercedes, FB5288. Shouldn't be too hard. Oh, damn! Hey! Fuck.
The car Mims is after overtakes him, and they both stop at a gas station.
Excuse me, sir. Hey! Hi! Hi, excuse me.
The man that seems to be Jonathan ignores him.
Excuse me! Excuse me.
What do you want?
You're not my guy, are you?
Mims raises his gun.
Take it easy.
How the fuck did you get the car?
It is mine. This man paid me 2,000 euros to drive it to Berlin and drop it off. We traded cars.
Fuck!
Mim shoots the imposter repeatedly. Broken glass outside the hotel.
The footsteps lead off in this direction. There is a blood trail as well. He must have sustained a serious injury. Mm-hmm. We need to run a forensic test on all this material. All of the evidence is here, except nobody.
A blood-soaked shard. A detective looks up at the hotel sign.
Sir, a Kevlar flak jacket. Government issue.
A car pulls up at a large, derelict, stately home. Inside, shafts of light break through boarded-up windows, penetrating the gloom. Jonathan retrieves the original package from a barrel, then takes out a knife. He makes two cuts across the top of the package, creating a large X in the brown paper. Inside is a metal box, which he opens. It's full of newspaper clippings from around the world, showing pictures of a crashed aeroplane. Jonathan finds some in English which read, "Plane crashes, terrorist attack in air, Americans die in plane crash, and finally, tragedy in the air." Beneath the clippings is a brown paper envelope containing photographs. One is of some sort of device, while another is of Jared and some other men, and a final picture is of a flight recorder. Finally, Jonathan finds the orange metal flight recorder with the words "Do not open" written on it and a set of large keys. He removes the flight recorder from the metal box, then takes a small explosive device made from a digital watch, a CD and some white putty. One red and one white spiral wire finish the bomb. He places it on a ledge. Now, Dunois is making his way through a forest. He falls to his knees and scrambles along. He pulls a large metal box from its hiding place beneath leaves and bracken next to a stream. Inside are firearms and a small green plastic box with a cross on it. He opens it and pulls out a bottle of clear liquid, which he pours onto a wound in his abdomen. His face is cut and grazed. He fumbles with a package of wadding, which he stuffs up against the wound, grimacing as he does so. He puts the cigarette in his mouth and lights it. He takes a pistol from the case and a pair of sunglasses, which he places on his head. Finally, he grabs a rifle. Warsaw, Poland. An expensive car approaches Sean. It pulls up beside him, and a back window slides open, revealing Jared.
Sean, we need to talk. Get inside. Take a drive.
Sean gets into the back of the car, looking a little perplexed.
bad is it?
Could get a lot worse if we don't bring him in.
What do you expect me to do, Jared? I talked to him for 20 minutes. He told me he had to go to Germany on business, and after that, who knows where.
All I'm asking is that you wait on a call. Help bring him in. That's it.
Sean thinks for a moment. In a hotel room, Jonathan has the flight recorder on a table with the newspaper clipping spread around it. He opens the round orange recorder, then unscrews something inside, pulling out a long strip of film. A phone rings at a table where Sean is waiting anxiously. Jared and his men stand over him.
Hello.
Sean, I was about to leave a message.
What's up?
Do you remember an old friend of Dad's by the name of Agatha Shearwater?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, listen, I got a package I got to send to her. Tell her it's really important that she gets it and tells me what's on it immediately.
John.
And one other thing, it's important. Remember my friend Boris? Works in the same department. Tell him I might be calling him soon here.
Listen, John, there's something here that I need to go over with you. Something of Dad's, something that he left for you. We can't close his office down until then. Do you think that, he could maybe come back?
I don't know.
And just for a day or two. It's important.
I'll try to make it back later.
Listen, John.
You did a good thing, Sean.
A chauffeur gets out of a car at the Van Aken house.
Hello?
There's a little fire lane numbered 16 north of Terminus. Can you find it?
Yes.
On this fire lane, there's an old building on the west side. That's where I'll be. I'll wait 10 minutes. By 4:15, I'll be gone.
Be on time, be alone.
What about my daughter? I need to take care of her and make sure she's safe.
She'll be fine. Just you be careful.
I hope so. She's all I've got. I'll see you in a little while. Goodbye.
My Fuhrer sends his apologies. Hiring a sauerkraut to drive your rental and you buy his car was a nice touch. I hope you weren't too far out of pocket on my account.
You know, you kind of look like Ray Charles. Then again, old Ray probably can't shoot as good as you, right?
There you go.
What can I do for you?
We'll talk about it on the way down. Let's go.
What Jared sent you?
Something like that. Should have stayed in France, man. Kept this little business venture out of the spotlight.
Let me ask you something. Did Jared offer and send you for this package?
And what fucking package would that be?
All right, man. Let's just cut to the chase, okay?
You like the dollar bill?
Oh, dead presidents. Greenbacks. You care to expound?
I'm gonna give you 10 times more than he's giving you for this little piece of business.
I got a disc. That disc is loaded with all kinds of offshore accounts of the biggest dogs in the world. You access that, that's hundreds of millions of dollars.
But of course you don't have this with you, do you?
It's real close.
Wow. You don't miss a trick. Well, I guess the ball is in your court for the next 2 minutes. Fuck up. At least I get to kill a legend.
I have no love lost for Jared over the hill, Oliphant. He can kiss my black ass.
They arrive at the derelict stately home.
Yeah, you know, your man Dumois. When I popped the cap in his ass, he flew out the window like a Boeing.
Well, how's it look, you know?
So far, so good. How's it look inside?
Look good to me.
Oh, good. No surprises, right?
I ain't nothing for you.
See, you're the man. You are the man.
Yeah, I hope we're getting close to that disc. Better watch your ass, Mr. Cole. I don't want to shoot you in the back.
Jonathan walks up some steps, and Mims follows. Meanwhile, a smart 4x4 leaves the Van Aken house. Inside the stately home, Jonathan stops under a large archway.
I don't suppose it would pay to ask who sent you.
No good.
You know, I just somehow feel like this might be the end of the road for me. But you do kind of remind me of my cousin Delbert from down around Boogaloo's.
Jonathan grabs Mims by the arm, twisting it up and flipping the large man over. Mims' gun flies up in the air, and Jonathan hurls him hard against a wall. Jonathan walks off, leaving Mims on his knees. He pushes himself up. Mims dusts off his jacket and walks off, joining Jonathan on the other side of the ruin, which looks out over a vast lake.
So I let you live and you do me like this now?
You let me live.
Come on!
Mims fires punch after punch at Jonathan, who expertly deflects each blow, then hits Mims in the throat, sending him flying backwards. Jonathan stands back and watches as Mims struggles to push himself up. Covered in straw, he gets to his feet and clicks his arm back into place. He pulls a gun from his sock and aims it at Jonathan.
Sweet dreams, Bruce Lee.
Here's the desk.
He throws a CD device at Mims and it explodes in his face.
Have a barbecue.
With flames billowing from his clothes, Mims falls back into the water. A bullet hits the ground between Jonathan's feet.
That was not an accident, old friend. I promise you, I haven't had a clean shot like that in years.
Marquet send you?
Our good friend Marquet met with an untimely accident. I'm sorry to have to tell you this. I remember how close you were.
You know, for some reason, you don't look too good.
You don't look so good yourself. I should be on the Riviera. A craving I've had since my mother showed me the ocean. Waves massaging the shore, whilst I watched the sunset, drinking champagne. Now, no more bedtime stories. Where's the package?
What package?
You're running out of hiding places, my friend. Do you believe I found this born through premonition? Do what you can to eliminate the innocent from this equation.
Well, then it looks like you've been had, Dumois. Because Meredith may have sent you to kill me, but she's already got the package. Now, I thought you were a lot smarter than that.
No. You're much smarter than that. I know you like I know myself. Don't fuck with me.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you go ahead and kill me then? Start your own little Easter egg hunt.
What the fuck is that?
That sets up a honing device. Folks will come and find you within a couple of meters.
Let's... who know where to find you?
Foreign ops.
Well, how do you stop it?
You don't. It's too late.
Son of a bitch. They know you're here. The CIA.
And you know what that means? If these folks are coming, there's a lot more behind them. You can bet on that.
All right. You've bought some time. I'll go to his wife. Get the package. I'll deal with her. Then we walk away.
I'd love to walk away.
The 4x4 pulls up outside the derelict building, and Meredith gets out. As she heads inside the ruin, her arrival distracts Dunois. As he turns, Jonathan whacks him across the face with a metal bar. Dunois falls heavily into some crates.
What's going on?
Listen, I'll explain later. We gotta get out of here.
Jonathan retrieves the package.
Let's go.
They get into Meredith's 4x4 and drive off.
Your estate. I'm gonna borrow a few things and I'll leave you this, then I'm out of here.
Mr. Weber, I...
Jonathan, my name is Jonathan, and I've opened the package. Why are you and your husband so interested in that crash?
There's a we involved, but it doesn't include me.
Two cars pull up at the ruin, and armed men get out.
All right, let's move, let's move. Jared wants a clean sweep of this place immediately. Keep moving. Let's go, let's go.
You said we. Who else besides your husband was involved?
Jared Oliphant.
Are they in here, Jared and your husband?
I'm not sure.
Prep the charges.
Dunois hides behind the crates as bombs are set out.
Come on, hurry it up. I want no traces left.
I need you to help us get away from Jerome. Far away. I know what they did, and I know why they did it. I've been planning this for a year, and now I'm sure with your help we can finally get out.
I'm not going to do anything until you tell me why they blew up that plane.
Dunois holds his gun in front of him.
Setting final charge now. Prepare to move out.
In 1982, Jerome formed a company called Unified Growth, building fertilizer plants throughout Europe. The plants were a front.
Biochemical warfare.
All the plants came under the umbrella of the International Security Services Board.
Run by Jared Oliphant.
The head engineer of Unified Growth documented everything. He was planning on exposing the entire operation. The developer's name was Stefan Stockwell. He was a very good friend of mine. Stefan kept quiet until he had every detail accounted for. He was going to Greece. He never made it.
Jared's men drive off, taking Jonathan's car with them.
If my husband suspects that I have anything to do with this, he will kill me. And anyone else who's associated with me.
What do these lead to?
The truth. Stefan had a house in Norway. Trum knows nothing about it. Stefan hid the documents, and I am the only one left who knows where they are. And how deeply involved Jerome and Jared are.
I may be able to get you and your daughter into Paris and then from there into Norway.
I know this isn't easy for you. Thank you.
Dunois races from the abandoned mansion. The entranceway to the building explodes in a cloud of rubble and sparks. Dunois runs for his life. Meredith and Jonathan pull up at the gates to the Van Aken estate.
I suggest you don't talk on the phone to anybody about anything because I think your husband's got the wire tapped.
Tapped?
Well, this guy that found us at the barn had to get there somehow and he probably heard something on the phone that led him there.
I also suggest you figure out something to tell your daughter about who I am and why you're going with me here.
Okay.
Goodbye.
As he gets out of the car, images of her daughter flash through her mind. Warsaw, Poland. Sean arrives at a restaurant to find Jonathan sitting at a table waiting for him. He takes a seat opposite.
What do you think? Dad's all hang up. You hungry?
No. Listen. Here. Agatha said to tell you she sent the original to your usual pickup.
Don't worry about it.
Hey. You mind if we go someplace else? Somewhere we can talk?
Jonathan and Sean get up and head into a different part of the restaurant. When they've gone, the group of men watching nearby get up and follow, but Jonathan and Sean are nowhere to be found. One of the men makes a call.
We lost them.
Outside, Jonathan and Sean are walking along in silence. The men head out of the restaurant while Sean and Jonathan talk in a bar.
What the hell's going on, John?
What are you talking about?
Jared's telling me you fucked up big time. Look, he told me what you did after you got caught. You tried to negotiate your way out by giving up Dad's name to the fucking KGB? Just to save your own ass?
He's playing you to get to me.
Then you tell me what happened.
You know I'm not a talkative man. But I'll say this. I was what they call a foreigner. Deep undercover. No trace, no ties. I was arrested for espionage. Dad and Jared probably could have got me out. Jared made sure that they didn't. Suddenly, the whereabouts of Jonathan Cold are no longer recorded. Jared left me to rot in Soviet prison.
Sean pulls out an envelope.
It's where Jared is. His boys have probably told him by now they lost us.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan pulls a photograph of Sean from the envelope. On the back of it is an address. Someone's training a rifle at Jared, who's standing in a deserted town square in the darkness. Jonathan attacks the gunman before he can fire. As a horse-drawn carriage rolls by, Jonathan approaches Jared.
Jared, aren't you a little old for this cloak and dagger shit?
By now, I'm sure you know it's almost behind me. Do yourself a favor, Jonathan. Walk away. Get on a plane and go. You've made your point.
I somehow think if I got up on a plane, it'd suddenly blow up in the sky.
Somehow, you always know, don't you?
Oh, that tape's not going to do any good for anything anymore. It's too late.
You really think after 16 years that little episode will come home to roost? Think again.
Okay. Listen, a little piece of advice. Stay away from me.
The time is right. I'm sure Sean will be there to lend a hand.
Jared pulls a gun on Jonathan as he turns to leave, but Jonathan fires off a shot under his arm, hitting Jared and sending him flailing back onto the steps of a small monument. An aeroplane comes into land. Berlin.
They are not coming, are they? Doesn't seem like it. Listen, want to hand you this. You know what to do if anything happens to me. No problem.
At the Van Aken estate, Jonathan gazes through the gate at the family house. Dunois appears with a gun pointing at Jonathan.
This side looks good. I've been spotting this wall all day.
How come I'm still running into it? It's very strange.
Because you didn't kill me at the old building. Why are you here? You didn't return for the princess. How little you know. The little princess hired me to kill her husband.
Come on, Dunois, you can do better than that. I mean, don't you think it's just a little bit of a coincidence that you have found both of us?
She reached me through the Danish. How she knows them is anybody's guess.
I told Marquette you were behind this and you killed him, didn't you?
Going to Versailles was supposed to be simple. Take care of the Russians, collect the package.
And get rid of me, yeah?
You weren't supposed to be there.
But I was.
That was your friend Marquette's call. Sending forth his confidant. He was the go-between for Jerome Van Aken. What are you gonna do? Pull the trigger? Huh? There's an army of them in there. It's impossible to get in alone. And you, my friend, want in. Together, I think we can.
Once we're in, do whatever you want. Just stay away from me and stay away from the girl. All right, let's do this. Remember, I will be watching you, every move you make. Let's go.
Dunois pushes his rifle through the gate, then follows Jonathan. Further along the fence, the two men climb over and later are spying on the guards around the house.
Six, seven, yeah?
Seven, yeah.
How many rounds you got?
Six. It's a long shot. You're the expert.
Jonathan's pistol.
Take this.
Cheers.
Jonathan takes the rifle and expertly shoots one guard after another. They get right up to the house, where more guards are milling about.
Fuck it. Use a rifle.
They each fire, sending the guards tumbling into the water below. While Jonathan tries to prise open a window with his knife, Dunois scans the area for more guards, unaware that one is coming up behind him. Spotting this, Jonathan heads over, only to be met by yet another guard. Jonathan grabs him by the arm and twists it so that the guard's own gun shoots him in the face. Dunois is struggling with his assailant until Jonathan walks over and kicks the gunman hard in the groin. The guard tumbles back into the water. Now inside the house, they cross a checkered tiled floor. Dunois raises his pistol.
Bon fucking Swami, sir.
What do you think, I'm stupid? That wasn't very nice, but then again, one good turn deserves another.
Jonathan shoots Dunois, who falls flat on his back, his cigarette still balanced in his mouth. Jonathan enters a large, ornate room and raises his gun at a man who's sitting at a desk.
Mr. Cold, I presume. It's a pleasure to meet you, finally. You come highly recommended to me by a friend of mine, Alexander Marquet. I was hoping you had something for me.
No.
You delivered it to Meredith?
Yeah.
Allow me to enlighten you as to the condition of my wife, Mr. Cold. She is a deeply troubled woman.
I don't want to hear it.
But I think it's only fair. After all, I have a feeling you've fallen victim to her illness. It evokes a certain bird with a broken wing syndrome. Meredith has a way with people, Mr. Cold, a talent for persuading them to assist her in playing out her delusions. She took my daughter, Mr. Cold. And diseased or not, that is the basest form of moral turpitude imaginable.
And what about Stefan?
He was a very good friend of mine.
Yeah, up until he had an affair with your wife, right?
I didn't find out about the affair until a year ago, Mr. Cold. And by then it had very little bearing on my feelings towards Stefan.
Well, listen, I'd like you to listen to this.
A tape machine.
There's something moving towards us.
This can't be right.
Well, I'm telling you, it's moving in our flight path. Check the radar.
Nothing. Wait. Yes, I see it. There, cruising at 28,000 feet.
It's going to hit us unless... Oh my God, yes.
Believe what you will, Mr. Cold, that I have the power to motivate something as terrible as that. I'm sure she's told you what she thinks I've done and why I did it. The whole incident's been an ongoing obsession of Meredith's the past decade. Stefan Stockwell was her lover, Mr. Cold. What he wasn't was some trumped-up humanitarian with a conscience. He was our top engineer. He knew very well what we paid him to do. Whatever dictated his ethics later on, if indeed anything did, I can't tell you. Unfortunately, he died in a plane crash, something which my wife has convinced herself I am entirely responsible for. Wishing something to happen and planning it are two very different things, Mr. Cold.
That's true.
Despite my personal differences with Stefan, I would not kill dozens of innocent people to see him dead. As I've told you before, Meredith is a very persuasive woman.
Now, where is she?
Jerome gets up from his desk and walks over to the window.
Find my wife and daughter, Mr. Cold. Find them and bring my daughter back safely, and I will pay you any price, including any judgments or inquiries placed upon me.
Well, I would imagine you have your own pros. Why don't you use them?
Well, I understand one of my closest met with an unfortunate accident in Warsaw last night. I'm afraid I'm running out of them. I can make you a very rich man, Mr. Cold. Bring my daughter back safely at any price.
And what about your wife?
Jerome walks down the room away from Jonathan with his hands behind his back. Then he turns to face him.
I leave that up to your best judgment.
Jonathan scowls at Jerome for a moment, then turns to go. The shadow of a pistol travels along a wall, then a telephone rings. Jerome picks up the handset.
Yes? It must look like an accident. Yes.
Dunois appears.
I expected more from you, Dunois. At the very least, I thought you would have recovered that package. But no matter. I'm sure Mr. Cold will help finish things.
Dunois starts to laugh madly.
Oh, yes. Your services are no longer required.
Dunois sniggers in disbelief.
I'm afraid my employer feels differently.
He empties a shower of bullets into Jerome. Norway. In a little cottage, Meredith is looking through some photographs of Stockwell while her daughter skips happily outside. Jonathan and another man walk along, and shadows follow the little girl as she heads inside.
Come on, Clarissa, come inside, please.
Mommy,
Mom. Over here, darling.
While Meredith looks to the door with a concerned expression, Jonathan to a truck owner.
Thanks for the lift. I need to go to the old farmhouse. It's down the road.
The truck heads off as Clarissa runs through the cottage happily. Outside, a raised gun moves slowly towards the door. As booted feet move stealthily through the cottage, the truck trundles along a country road. With Clarissa in her arms, Meredith looks up to find an armed man entering the room.
Ten!
He's followed by two others who grab Meredith and her daughter. One of the assailants is the scarred man. The scarred man takes the little girl, while one of his colleagues slaps Meredith hard across the face.
Been killing!
The truck arrives at the cottage. Inside, the men are pouring petrol around one of the rooms. Jonathan gets out of the truck, gun in hand, and surveys the cars parked outside. As the truck pulls away, he carefully pushes open the front door. He treads lightly across the room to a door and pushes it open to find Meredith and Clarissa, tied up and gagged, sitting back to back. Jonathan scans the room, then heads over to them and opens his knife. He cuts through the ropes, binding them.
Jonathan, behind you!
It's a gunman. After briefly holding up his hands, Jonathan swiftly grabs the man's gun and fires. Next, he shoots at the scarred man, who falls back against the wall.
Get her out the window. Go, now.
Meredith climbs out of the window with her daughter while Jonathan heads back into the next room. Another gunman appears, but Jonathan opens fire before he has a chance to raise his gun. The gunman crashes back against the wall. As Jonathan abandons the shotgun, another gunman appears. Jonathan kicks a petrol can at him, then pulls out a lighter. He throws the flaming lighter at the pool of petrol, and flames travel quickly towards the gunman, engulfing him. Jonathan kicks him out of the way as he heads out. Outside, Meredith picks up Clarissa and runs away from the cottage. Jonathan emerges from the building, as the pictures of Stockwell are eaten by the flames.
Next time, wait for me, all right?
He holds Meredith and Clarissa for a moment as the flames hungrily devour the photographs. Now the sun sets behind the Eiffel Tower. Meredith and Clarissa are at Jonathan's apartment as he arrives home with some groceries.
Hope this will do.
Thank you.
And I need you to keep these closed.
It's a beautiful view.
Well, you'll just have to enjoy it later.
Somehow wine doesn't suit you. You seem more like a whiskey man.
What's that supposed to mean? And what else have you discovered while you were snooping around my home?
Only that you don't keep many personal artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
They clink glasses and drink their whiskey.
Do you have a family?
I have a brother.
Older or younger?
Wiser. Listen, I just kind of want to concentrate on how to get you out of Paris. Is there any place in particular that you'd like to go?
America.
Jonathan pulls out the tape.
This is yours.
A lot of good it should do now. All the real evidence was destroyed.
Well, we can build it again.
It's gonna be hard keeping her cooped up. Can I take her for a walk?
A busy road. Jonathan, Clarissa, and Meredith walking along.
It truly is a beautiful city. Oh, God.
What?
A man grabs Clarissa.
That girl, now. It's not safe for you on the streets. You've been spotted. Gotta get you out of here.
A cafe.
Sit down in here, right here. Don't move. You hear me? Don't move.
Jonathan heads out with his gun behind his back. He attaches a silencer. Crossing a road, he checks around, then places his gun into his belt. Back in the cafe.
The mother and daughter that were here. Have you seen them?
No.
In a fit of anger, Jonathan smashes a large mirror with the menu written on it. Back at his apartment,
Meredith?
Dunois is waiting for him.
It's for Meredith.
An envelope.
At the currency exchange. It was the least I could do. After you'd killed me twice.
Sorry about that, but you know, they say three is a charm.
Jonathan twists Dunois's arm.
Surprise!
He pulls a gun with the other hand. Disarmed, Dunois grabs a chair from the corner of the room and smashes it, attacking Jonathan with a chair leg. Effortlessly, Jonathan smashes Dunois in the face, flooring him. Dunois gets to his feet, grinning manically, holding a knife. He lunges at Jonathan, and the two men struggle for a moment. Jonathan breaks his arm and karate chops him in the chest, sending him back down onto the floor. Now Jonathan sitting on the bow of a small boat, reading a letter from Meredith.
Thank you for your help in securing the package. It was the only way I could force my husband to relinquish our daughter. But now that it's over and I have her, your services are no longer required. I wish you all the best. Maybe we'll meet again somewhere down the road. Meredith.